Radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, coming to you from a very, very frigid Fairfax, Virginia, and this is WEBR. And we have a great show for you, but it's nice and hot and popping on the air today, and we're going to have a lot of fun. So get cozy, get comfortable, and plan on joining us because we've got a show that's packed. And before I introduce my guest, I want to tell you about my brand new show, and I want to thank FPA for it. But starting next week, Saturdays from 1 to 2 Eastern Time, I will be hosting a new show called It's Your Turn. And It's Your Turn is exactly that. It's your turn. And you can call in with anything you want to call in about, as long as it has to do with homeowners associations. If you're having a problem, if you have any thoughts, any ideas, you can call in. And the number here is 703-560-TALK. 703-560-8255, and just pick up the phone, give us a call, and say hello and tell us what's going on. And then I'll go into On the Commons from 2 to 3. And so you'll be able to hear it on the Commons. But well, anyway, we'll be talking to you, so it's going to give you an opportunity to get on the air as well, because on the Commons we usually do just interviews and you can't call in with our one phone line. So I'm really excited about that. It's your turn, and it'll be on Saturdays from 1 to 2 Eastern Time. But today, on the air with me today are Donnie Venetian and Stephen Glassman. They're the authors of Villa Appalling and also the absolutely dynamite LA Times column called Associations. Stephen, Donnie, thank you so much for joining me today.
Delighted to be here.
Thank you, Sue.
I am delighted to have you guys here with me. We've been planning this for a while, and we just have never been able to get it together, so I'm really thrilled to have you here. Even though it's snowing buckets outside, I'm glad to be here. What can I say about Villa Appalling except, wow.
Like it, do you?
That doesn't even cover it, Steve. It is just incredible. And the thing is, as I've told Donnie, I mean, I can't sit down and read it page one, page two, page three. I just seem to flip-flop back and forth, and I get bits and pieces hither, thither, and yon, and I go back, and I try to find what I read, and, you know, my stickies have fallen off and fallen out, and my pens have come out of the book, but it's just been a lot of fun. And I've had other people tell me that they just can't get enough of the book. So thank you very much. 500 pages of just unbelievable stuff. It's incredible.
We could have written more.
I know. And I hope you will. I hope you will. But I hope you put it in a smaller book because, as you know, we had a hard time trying to decide what we were going to talk about today. But we have some great stuff. We're going to start off with some of the myths that surround associations. I think the biggest myth is the fact that associations protect property values, and you have some really an interesting take on that. You want to tell us a little bit about how associations protect property values?
That's the myth of investment chapter. Mm-hmm. We did quite a bit of research on that, and we didn't take it lightly, obviously, since both of us live in a CID, and we've watched property quote unquote values go up, and we've watched them go down. We've also been the recipients, or at least I have, of basic threats that say you are decreasing our property values.
How? How are you doing that?
That's a very good question, actually, because they've yet to prove to me that they've raised my property values.
It's interesting. We were defending a homeowner just recently in court, I was, and in their lawsuit they alleged that the homeowner was decreasing property values. And when I asked in discovery for any proof that they had of that, they were able to provide none. Zero.
Surprise, surprise.
And what a surprise. Of course they can't provide any proof that they're devaluing the value of the properties, because by the very nature of real estate values all over the country, they're just going up and up and up. And in Southern California especially, it's just impossible to show that the prices of any homes are going down.
Because of any one person.
Right.
And
because of any one person, indeed.
And property values are going up, not because of the association, despite the association. In fact...
Can you speak up just a little?
No,
we're having a hard time hearing you.
I'm sorry. Is this any better? Can you hear me now?
We can barely hear you.
We've been having problems with this board. Is this any better?
Not really. But that's all right. Let's just pane through this, and maybe you can fool around with that. And
we'll tell you what. Why don't I shut up and let you talk? Go ahead.
Well, as we say in the book, to be an investment, the homeowner must have control. And we don't have to pound this home. Do you know a homeowner in a CID that has control of their own property?
No.
The board rules, and that's what makes it not an investment. You just don't have any control. The easiest way to define it is, let's take your home as a box, and then let's take, say, stocks and put them in a box and ask how much money you have to pay every month to maintain your stocks as an investment. The answer, of course, is none. And if you wanted to liquidate that investment, you'd call up your broker and say, sell. And within a week, whatever the 7-day closing period is, you'd have your money. Now, how much money do you have to pay every month to keep your home as an investment? Well, of course, there's monthly dues, and then there's special assessments and whatever else they want to throw at you. And if you wanted to sell, well, in some cases, you have to get the permission of your association, and you have to pay association document transfer fees. And, God forbid, if you haven't paid your monthly association dues or a fine, you've got a lien against your property in some cases that can prevent the sale of your home. And you're certainly not going to be able to liquidate it in 7 days.
Not only that, with a real investment, you're able to go back to that bank or your stockbroker and get a statement of what they're doing to improve your, i.e., stocks or your bonds, and how they're, as we say in the book, the initial yield, the reinvestment rate. You try and look at the books, the real books and documents and substantiating documentation at your homeowner association when it gets down to the nitty-gritty, good luck.
Yeah, you just can't get that information, can you?
No, you can't, because a very odd thing happens. It disappears. It disappears, it's been fabricated, it's been written over. Nobody can find those ledgers. As with one of the cases that we know, when the board got sued, the board members with the books left, sold the units overnight, and took the books with them.
Well, there was this case out of Houston where the board members kept saying they'd lost the bank statements. And the homeowner was trying to get the information, so they went to the attorney general, and for once the attorney general did something. They requested the books and records. They got the same runaround from the association. Oh, we've lost all our records. Well, the AG went to the bank and subpoenaed the records. And guess what they found? They found that the board had been using association money and covering their own personal bills with association checks.
There are many ways to do that. And one of the ways to do that, to use association funds for your own personal gain, we have found, is visiting an association attorney. There is nothing that comes back to the association that says, well, this is what was discussed during that meeting. And even though we discussed personal problems of board members during these meetings and the association paid for it, You're not going to find that in writing.
That's very true.
Or the association will issue a check to one of the association's vendors when, of course, the work is actually done on a board member's home.
How about kickbacks?
How?
How about kickbacks? You know, that was something that was discussed a long, long time ago where, and we've got evidence of some of it, where, you know, the association writes these checks to vendors, and the vendors then kick some of the money back under the table to the boards.
And it's in cash without any way of tracing it.
Right.
Sure.
So that's affordable housing?
Not if you're not on the board.
That's
part of the problem. You've heard, so have we, about boards that are ensconced forever. In one case, we know of an association where the board president has been the board president for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's a question of whether or not there's ever been any real election, whether or not any proxies have ever been sent out, whether or not the proxies that supposedly elected this president were ever returned in the first place.
We're going to be talking about voting later on, because that's another one of the myths surrounding associations.
the biggest myth surrounding associations and this quote-unquote community-type living, which, as you know, we say is not a community at all,
mm-hmm.
is the fact that your property is increasing in value and that we take credit for that because we are the association. And we have helped that property increase. Now, on 306 in our book, page 306, we have a checklist of if even one of these 10 major risks applies, it's not an investment.
You know, guys, we're going to be flipping back and forth between this, you know, between the pages of this book. You really need to get a copy of Villa Appalling. And, you'll find out just how appalling it really is. You've done a great job with this.
Actually, Shu, we hope that by having people read this book, they will become aware that the problems they have are not theirs uniquely, number one. Number two, that the old adage about my problem not being your problem or your problem not being my problem is also not true.
That's right.
Even though the board may be focusing their attention and their targets at one homeowner or a small group of homeowners, that site, that gun site, can swing back and forth, and sooner or later everyone will become a target. So just because it's not your problem today doesn't mean it's not going to be your problem tomorrow. And by simply ignoring the fact that it's not happening to you only allows the board to continue to do it. And sooner or later, you will be a target, and then you'll wonder why nobody wants to come to your aid.
I'm sorry, Steve. That really adds up to the point of why it really is appalling. And it is appalling because it's a 24-hour job for you to live there. It isn't enough to have your own mortgage payment, your own health bills, your family problems, your kids' ballet lessons. That isn't enough. Because when you get home, you can't just shut that door. Because I don't know about you, Shu, but usually I can't even open my door because behind my door, I have a barrage of paperwork from the board, and it's piled up. They stick it in my door, and it's got rules, it's got regulations, it has threats, it has my name in it, and it's telling me what I can and I can't do, and it seems to be a constant, torturous drip of what I can and can't do.
And this is what your board's doing to you.
Well, I'm not alone.
I understand that. Oh, I understand that because you guys, I'm sure, are flooded with calls and emails. I get my fair share as well, and this ain't nowhere to live. I mean, this is ridiculous.
And that's the point we're trying to make. It would be one thing if it was limited, if it was minor, if it was an isolated incident, but it's not. And the fact that it's not happening to every homeowner at the same time only means that those homeowners to whom it's not happening are just next on the list. And by not joining with the homeowner who is the current target in helping to fight that attack, They only make it easier for the board to divide and conquer and continue to divide and continue to conquer.
But one of the other ways that they do this is by not giving all the homeowners all the information. It's selective enforcement. It's selective information gathering. And who is privy to that information is another problem. Many homeowners we've found that write the column, in fact, tell us that they received these papers from the board. Then the person who's targeted receives different paper from the board. So everything, one thing is consistent about living in a CID.
It's screwed
nothing
up.
Is consistent.
It's all screwed up. It's a mess.
There's nothing consistent. That's the problem. And you can't really, this is the shame. You can't take what they're telling you at face value. Because you have no way of proving or disproving what they're telling you.
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah, we've run into that a great deal. But you've got some really interesting takes, because we've had this for a long time. You know, associations protect and enhance property values. You've got some really very, very interesting takes. And I think one of, you know, when you talk about what you see ain't necessarily what you get, when you start this particular chapter or this particular, the myth of affordability, you talk about the looks on the outside, but what happens behind closed doors? The living conditions that people live under because they live in an association, these affordable housing, and they're taking care of the grass, but, you know, you talk about people who have no carpeting, plumbing that doesn't work, a stove that doesn't work, and they can't afford to replace this stuff? Is that what it is?
That's very true, because if it comes down to feeding your family or paying your association dues, what do? And truly, as difficult as this may be for some of your listeners to grasp, truly this happens, and it happens across the board. You get to a point where you can no longer afford it. Do I pay my insurance premiums, or do I pay to send my daughter away to camp? What do? And your family starts being deprived.
And that's when you have associations that can basically sort of raise assessments, fine you for whatever reason. And by the way, it has been, and I can't say this enough, it has been found to be unconstitutional, at least in 2 states. So, you know, if you're being fined, start questioning that. Don't take it lying down.
Well, questioning it in California can be a risky prospect and a very expensive one at that. You can end up in a volley of letters from association attorneys to which you must reply to. And I don't know about you, but most people, how do I reply to an attorney letter? What do I say? And that letter could get you in trouble, couldn't it?
Sure. Sure. If you're talking about affordability, I think it's really a function of the area in which you live. If you take a look at the average home price and then you take a look at the median income necessary to buy a home of that price and then compare that with the median income, and I know this sounds a little technical,
mm-hmm.
but what you ultimately find, of course, is that the number of people who earn the amount of money necessary to buy that home is well below what you would have hoped to find when they built the homes in the first place. I mean, if you're talking about homes in, and while we live in Southern California, and we're probably not the right market to be typical. I mean, you're looking at condominium home prices that are average, ordinary, run-of-the-mill condominiums that are in the $300,000 to $500,000 price range.
Yeah.
How many people can afford those?
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much what we're dealing with here, too.
So then maybe Southern California is not so atypical.
Well, I think parts of the country, you know, that would be very typical. But then if you go down to, say, someplace in the heartland of the country, Kansas, Iowa, I don't know. But even there, they're ramming these things down people's throats.
Yeah, and the same thing would apply. No matter where you live, the question is whether or not the median price of a common interest home is affordable by the majority of people? And the answer is probably it is not.
Of course, when they do these affordability indexes, they don't take into account the assessments and all the penalties.
Exactly. Exactly. It's one of the things we point out in the book. If you're paying $200 a month in homeowners' dues, that's an extra $2,400 a year that you have to pay out of your pocket in addition to your mortgage payments,
mm-hmm.
most of which you can't deduct.
That's right.
And in some cases, all of it you can't deduct because that's strictly maintenance, or so the law says.
Mm-hmm.
That's not deductible as a tax expense, whereas mortgage interest is. So on top of everything else you pay an additional premium just to live there. That doesn't seem fair to me, and it certainly doesn't sound affordable to me, and it's appearing more and more, of course, as the fees go up and up and up, or as associations are piled on top of associations.
Yeah.
I suppose that the Playa Vista project, which is in our neighborhood, has been written about in newspapers across the country, but there, in those housing projects, there are at least two associations. There's a master association,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a local association for each little housing project.
Right.
So now we have two associations
right.
to which you have to pay dues, and if you don't pay dues to both of them, then in theory you could lose your home.
That's right.
Then these homes start in excess of $200,000.
Right.
And they run to over $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a loss.
And just think, you're paying the same rate of taxes that everybody else pays.
On top of everything else, of
course. And then you have two associations to pay as well.
That's right. And don't forget, you're also gifting money to a reserve account, which you don't get to take with you when you leave. You're not donating it. You're gifting it.
What's the difference?
the difference is... you don't get it back.
And you can't you write off a donation? You can't write off a gift.
The interesting thing is that one of the recent letters to the column was from someone who has just moved in. And some years ago, there was a special assessment, and they didn't spend all the money. Now they want to give it back.
Mm-hmm.
And the board is trying to find the previous owner to give the money back to the previous owner. Well, it seems to me that if I would be liable to pay as the current owner if I was assessed,
mm-hmm.
then why shouldn't I be entitled to the benefit?
That's right.
Because I bought everything when I bought that unit.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And now the board refuses to give it back to them.
Yeah.
So guess what's happening? That money is going to stay with the board.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be some pool party.
We're not going to give it to you. We're going to spend it for you, and you can come and have a hot dog, right? Well, as you guys say in the book, follow the hot dog. So
follow
I guess
the hot dog. That and somehow that hamburger and that picnic just doesn't taste the same after you have to fill out a form for permission to have a picnic. Who could take a bite of that burger?
Follow the hot dog.
Follow the hot dog. That's true. It isn't follow the money. It's follow the hot dog.
Well, listen, we've got about 7 minutes before we take a break, and I'd really like to talk a little bit about the cost of incompetence. Priceless. You know, I go through and I write all these little sayings down, you know. I think they're so cute. I have so many of them here. I don't know that we'll get to them. But,
well, here it is. What better place for a board to take up an all-expense-paid hobby than their own homeowner association?
Now, that's another saying I love.
I just pray you don't have somebody who thinks he's a gardener.
Well, you have an example. You want to tell us about that example you have in the book?
With the Rubicon of expense, the ridiculous Rubicon of expense.
The rose garden, yes. You have two of them.
There are several different associations that we're aware of up and down the coast, all the way through Washington and Oregon, where for some reason they have this bug about roses. They want to put in roses. Well, you can't have roses unless you take care of them. They're very expensive to take care of. They grow in a very particular type of climate. Well, several homeowner associations have planted roses, lots and lots of them, and very expensive ones at that.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these board members think that they are experts at rose gardens. Well, what happens is roses get prone to leaf-eating bugs and white fungus and mold. and other types of problems. And if you don't take care of them, they get root rot and they die. And they also spread mold, white mold, to other vegetation. So after spending thousands of dollars on these so-called roses and deciding he couldn't hide the expenditure any longer, they decided to yank them out and throw them away.
How wonderful.
But this isn't happening at one association. It's happening across the nation. If it's not roses, it might be a water lily garden where one association president decided that was what she always wanted. So now that she's president of the board, she can do that with your money.
That's right. That's absolutely right, and you have no control over it.
Steve's laughing because he just can't even take the global positioning system.
There's an association here in California.
Just put me away. Put me away. I can barely stand
they
it.
They hired their management company, hired a consultancy, and they spent upwards of
$40,000
on a global positioning system so they could know where all their trees were.
You, the next time you see a walking tree, you have to call us immediately.
Well, listen, we've always talked about getting the satellite camera up there and watching to make sure that people comply with the governing documents. So why not following the trees? I mean, if you're going to follow the hot dogs,
comply or they're going to be yanked.
You're right. Speaking of compliance, I guess it was last week. What was his name? Walt Mitters editorial.
The cartoon.
There was an editorial cartoon by Walt Mitter that ran in the papers where he syndicated, and I think it typifies the action of boards. The cartoon shows a picture of George W. Bush standing at a podium, saying, "If the UN won't enforce its own resolutions, we'll start working through an organization that will."
Yep.
And standing right behind him is a beer-bellied, balding, mustachioed man with a briefcase on which it says,
Homeowner Associations, right?
And the Homeowners Association guy is saying, "We'll foreclose at dawn."
Yeah, the minor is just the wrong color of gold there, you know.
The pathetic part of all of it is that it demonstrates just how much power homeowners associations have, perhaps in some cases even more than the president.
Well,
that may not be priceless, that's priceless.
That is priceless, absolutely. But you know what? It's the butt of everybody's joke. I mean, everybody's making fun of them. And these guys don't see it. They just continue to give people enough food for these cartoons. And, I mean, I run across all these stories all the time that people make up about homeowners associations and gargoyles, you know.
Well, there's some good news, of course, behind all of that. The fact that homeowners associations now become the butt of editorial cartoons means that they are also becoming a target. And hopefully with some of the stuff that we've written, hopefully with cartoons like that one, and with the good work of homeowners, that's going to change. We've been fortunate. We now know of at least six different homeowners associations in the last year or year and a half that have gone to bat and thrown out their boards.
Yeah, but Steve, I mean, that's great and you can do it, but, you know, that's not a real solution to the problem, because what happens is you end up, it's like a ping pong game. You get one side, one faction that's in power, and then it gets kicked out by the other faction. And there's never any stability. There's never any peace of mind.
That depends. I think if you wind up with a benevolent despot, it's better than a tyrant.
It is, but they come back. They have a way of coming back. I've seen it happen over the 15 years that I've been involved in this. You get rid of one lot, and another lot steps in. And
well, that's true. We know that everybody is just one election away from tyranny.
Exactly.
But we also know that if you start with an overthrow of your board, that may give you, should give you, the impetus to begin considering overthrowing the laws. Because if you can oust somebody at one election, the next ouster at an election is a legislator.
And if
those folks start losing their jobs, then the change in the law will come. And we know it's going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight. But you have to start somewhere. And if you can start at the local level, that's enough, we think, to give you the satisfaction that you can do it and the impetus to go forward.
Well, having said that, you know that in Arizona, they just got a bill passed that, and congratulations to Arizona, by the way, they just got a bill through committee that would severely curtail foreclosures. It's just not the immediate, we'll just go to court and have you out of your house by tomorrow type of thing. It still allows foreclosures, and it has a long ways to go. But I was very proud of the homeowners there, because a number of them showed up and testified, and a number of them sent in their supports. And so at the end of the hearing, when the supports were read, the industry had about seven names for their opposition to this proposed bill, and the homeowners actually came in with close to 200 names. And so, I mean, you know, that right there should tell the legislators, hey, these are the taxpayers, these are the voters, and they're watching you.
It starts somewhere. One of the things we had suggested in legislation that was ultimately rejected by committee in California was that there be no allowance for foreclosures based on a failure to pay homeowners' dues. Sure, you can place your lien, and yes, you can collect your lien when the property is sold
right,
or the last owner dies, but you can't foreclose. And that was quickly killed by government leaders who were being paid off by the industry in terms of lobbying dollars and re-election campaign contributions.
Well, this is where the homeowners...
One property that I'm aware of up north in California right now, several, at least 50, 60 acres, they're foreclosing because the gentleman owes somewhere around $350.
Mm-hmm.
We had no idea he even owned it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my question. I suppose the Homeowner Association, for all that time that he owed the $350, was really struggling to stay afloat.
Oh, yeah.
That they needed that $350
oh, sure,
so badly that
oh,
they
sure
had to foreclose on 60 acres of land.
Yeah. I mean, if they can't, I agree. I mean, if they can't sit on $6,300, there's a real problem there. You know what? We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes. Donnie and Steve will be with us. Don't go away.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no faithful lingo, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
In the land of the free, in the home of the brave, an American flag flying proudly for all to see brings tears to the eyes of anyone who fought to defend this great country. Flying the flag is a privilege that every patriotic American holds dear to their heart. It is a tribute to those who died believing freedom was more valuable than life. H.H. Hunt, the developer of the Wyndham community of Richmond, Virginia, doesn't believe the residents of Wyndham have the right to fly their flag without his approval. H.H. Hunt took Richard Olden, a decorated combat veteran, to court for flying the American flag in a manner that Hunt considered a visual nuisance. This is a sad event in our history. We urge you to contact your elected officials. Call the governor, lieutenant governor, the speaker of the Virginia House, your state senator, and your state delegate. Tell them that you'll not allow H.H. Hunt or anyone else to take the right to fly our flag in a respectful manner away from us. Do it today.
Visit us at AmericanFlagTrial.com.
WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Shrew Bartholomew. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions, and we are delighted and thrilled today to have Donnie Venetian and Stephen Glassman from sunny, warm California join us in a hot, sizzling studio here where it's snowing outside, but we're really happy to have you with us. Steve and Donnie are the authors of Villa Appalling and the L.A. Times Real Estate Column Association. How can people get in touch with you guys?
They can write to Villa Appalling at earthlink.net, and I believe it's on your website as well.
Yes, it is on my website, but anybody who does not go to my website and is listening to us in Virginia, they can just write to you at villaappalling at earthlink.net, right?
That's right.
Okay. All right. And you can always call me, contact the studio, the station will give you information on how to get a hold of them. And I would highly recommend that you read the book. If you live in an association, or if you live in Virginia, you don't have much of a choice. You're going to have to live in an association, but get the book. Arm yourself. Know how to protect yourself. We have an email. We have a question from an admirer, a fan of yours, actually. And he writes, this is from Gordon in California. And he says, Shu, I'm looking forward to your conversation with Donnie Venetian and Steve Glassman. I read their column regularly and have kept copies of most of them for future battles with our legislature. I have a couple of questions for them if you have time. We always have time for your questions, Gordon. Many of your responses to readers' problems have basically stated sympathy for their problem, but that there is very little that can be done because of the Davis-Sterling Act. Question number one, this act seems to be clearly unconstitutional because it interferes with the terms of a contract, yet it has never been challenged in the courts. Why not?
Well, to start with, the courts in California have said that the CC&Rs actually constitute a contract between the association and the homeowner. And the other problem is contracts are not unconstitutional or not illegal unless they are against public policy or are for the commission of a crime. Once you enter into a contract, which is really private law, it's a contract, whether it's a contract of adhesion, which not all of which are invalid, or a meeting of the minds contract where you've negotiated all of the terms.
But
that's unfortunately the answer to this first question.
Okay.
The act itself is not unconstitutional, the Davis-Sterling Act. That's passed the constitutionality test over the last 15 years. So the fact that he thinks it interferes with the terms of a contract, unfortunately, Gordon, the act does not interfere with the terms of a contract.
Okay. And then he says, what can we do to change, replace it, so that the problems raised in your column will be resolved?
Well, how about getting rid of it altogether?
Getting rid of the act.
Getting rid of the Davis-Sterling Act and not replacing it with UKIA.
You know, that Uniform Common Ownership Interest Act that's already been adopted in some states.
Yeah, I think 17 states have them. That was written by the industry.
Just like the Davis-Sterling Act.
Just like the Davis-Sterling Act. Well, you know what? They're all written by the industry.
Yeah. If homeowners are interested, if Gordon is interested, one of the things he can do, as I say, is to try to organize some of the people in this neighborhood and create a little block, spelled BLOC. Then he gets a hold of his legislator and says that he has a voting bloc that's interested in a particular piece of legislation, for example, repeal of the Davis-Sterling Act or amendment of a portion of the Davis-Sterling Act so that it would be more receptive to homeowners' problems and less favorable to the industry. And he promotes that on the basis of his voting bloc, and that in and of itself may be enough to get the legislator's attention. We've been told that letters opposing legislation, individual letters from individuals received by legislators, are ignored.
Oh, really?
This is in our book as well.
When I was in Sacramento testifying on behalf of legislation which we wrote in an effort to help homeowners, I was told by the legislative assistant for one of these congressmen, legislators, that if the letter is written by an individual, it's basically ignored. Unless the letter is written on behalf of an organization or an association or some group with power or votes.
Or perceived power.
Or perceived power or votes. It's ignored. So we ran a test.
Okay.
We created an organization And we wrote to the legislature. We said essentially the same thing, but now we said we're writing on behalf of this organization.
Okay.
HOA ATM. That's our organization that we created.
And suddenly we were accorded much more respect for our position than we had been as individuals.
Oh, really?
Actually, they were quite upset because they couldn't believe that they had ousted an organization at one point, and they called and said, where did this come from?
Right.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. Well, I think that, yeah, because now you're able to influence a greater number of people than just one vote, basically.
Or so it would seem.
Yes.
And that's the difficulty. It's
the perception.
Perception rather than reality. So if Gordon is interested, Gordon puts together two or three of his neighborhood association owner friends, and he creates a little organization, and he writes on behalf of that organization, and he will get much more attention. Or he can just write and he can join HOA ATM, which, by the way, the dues for which are zero.
Oh, there you go. I'll join at that price.
Right. And if he puts together a little organization and gives it a name, suddenly he'll get a lot more attention from his legislators than he would just by writing on his own. And it's stupid, but that's exactly the way they function up there.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. I went down to Washington, D.C., and I went down to the Capitol Hill one day, and I just at random walked into offices, congressional offices, and when I went in as myself, they didn't want to talk to me. They kept pushing me towards the door. When I said I hosted a radio show with national listeners, all of a sudden, you know, well, why don't you come in and sit down? Although I wasn't necessarily representing an organization, but I had the perceived influence on a bigger number of people. So that you're absolutely correct.
We know.
Yeah.
Yep. The next thing is the checkbook.
Yeah. They'll want to know how much you can contribute.
Correct.
And that's right. Oh, I get those all the time.
The cash constituency. Yep.
If I had. Yeah, but you know what? The voting constituency is much, much more important. They need to understand that. I think we're probably, with the Internet, we're probably moving away from all of that cash stuff. I hope, anyway.
We're not?
No. I wish it were true, but it's not. One of the legislators in California who was instrumental in railroading through some of the most severe legislation and amendments to the Davis-Sterling Act was term limited out this year and ran for city council or county, the county office in his home county. And he lost the election by a very small margin and challenged the votes and somehow managed to get elected to the seat.
Oh, really?
So here's a legislator, a career politician, who is anti-homeowners, who is representing homeowners in a county where probably 70 or 80% of the homes are part of associations, and still feeding at the public trough because he's got a name. We think it's because he was an incumbent, and they recognized his name because he was elected. Never mind what he did. Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
he was the incumbent, and he was elected now to county office because he was termed out of the legislature, and that's a shame. I mean, there's just no excuse for that.
Name recognition counts for a lot.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Yeah, and so you just keep getting your name out there, HOA ATM. You know, just sort of ingrain it in people's brains. Yeah.
Well, on the commons. It was created just to test the information we've been given, and
it's taken on a life all its own.
I think that's funny. Okay, well, for, you know, in case you guys missed it, if you want to get in touch with Steve and Donnie, write to villaappalling@earthlink.net, right?
That's correct.
villaappalling@earthlink.net. You can also get it from my website, onthecommons.com. I keep forgetting to give that out. Okay, I love your book. I would highly recommend that everybody read it. Just get cozy and comfortable, because there's 500 pages, so you'll get your money's worth out of it. But you also write a bi-weekly column? and it's called Associations. And I have last week's, which I think is fantastic. It's a lean threat has no legal ground. Want to talk a little bit about it? Tell us about it.
In this case, the reader was concerned because he had sent his monthly fees, but the association, apparently the management company now, was returning the money orders, saying that he would be subject to late fees and collection fees, and they'll place a lien on the unit for failure to pay.
And the reason they returned it was because they didn't like what he wrote. Now, we had stronger letters of other items people have written on their checks that are unrepeatable on this show, but we will tell you that people have written a lot of things on their checks.
Oh, I know.
So they returned it because they had... He had written something on his money order. There are two things to be cautious about here. In California, a lien can be placed on a property, and a property can be foreclosed if you don't pay your homeowner's dues.
Uh-huh.
If you are fined for a violation of rules or regulations, they cannot place a lien on your home in California, and they cannot foreclose on that lien in California. That may not be true in other states. So we have to caution everybody to make sure that the laws in their state, that they comply with the laws in their state. But in this case, the threat that they had made about putting a lien on his property and foreclosing because he was going to be fined for violation of rules and regulations, no. Or because he wrote something on his check, no. You can write anything you like on your dues check, on your monthly dues check, and as Donnie's already indicated, we have seen some pretty salty language on those checks, and the association is obligated to accept it, regardless of the wording. So any of the threats that you can't write anything on your check, it's a crock.
But, Steve, you know, I keep hearing from people, associations are not accepting checks. I called the Fair Trade Commission and was told that you don't have to accept the payments.
And which commission told you that?
The Fair Trade Commission down here in Washington, because they have the Fair Debt Collections, you know, the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act comes out of their agency. And I said, I don't see anything in here that indicates that an association or a creditor has got to accept payments. And he says, no, you don't.
This is different.
No, you're talking about consumer credit. This is not consumer credit.
Well, it is, isn't it? I mean, that's what the industry would like you to believe, because then they would exempt associations from the FDCPA.
Well, they would like to do that, I suppose,
yeah,
because they don't want to comply with the regulations.
That's exactly right.
But and you can write anything you like on your payment. If you know the old story, if you wrote your check on the back of a pig, as a farmer did years ago, and sent the pig to the bank,
yeah,
the bank would be obligated to cash the check.
And have bacon and eggs in the morning.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
So the same thing is true here. You can write anything you like. If they do not accept the tender of payment, then the likelihood is that the homeowner is excused from any penalties that may accrue as a consequence.
You oh, really?
You have tendered the payment that's due. That's all you're legally obligated to do is tender the payment.
And if they refuse to accept it?
The problem is theirs, not yours.
Well, right. There is another problem, and that is you proving that you tendered the payment. And that's what this article is about, proving that you actually did pay.
All right. How can someone prove that they actually paid?
Well, one of the reasons we say pay by money order or cashier's check is it eliminates several different problems. One of the problems is some people forget to sign their check. A money order eliminates the signature requirement. It also has embedded in it the dollar amount, which means if you handwrite $200, yet you write 20.00, you've only tendered $20, or did you tender $200? It eliminates that problem as well.
The human errors, basically.
Correct. And the other problem that it tends to eliminate is when the board says, well, you had every incentive to hang on to your check because you kept that money in your checking account. Well, if you purchased the money order, that money order was bought and the money was tendered at that time, so you have no incentive for holding on to that money order. You have every incentive to send it off and pay it. you gain no benefit from holding on to it. So a money order and a cashier's check actually eliminate several problems for homeowners. And frankly, I don't know about you, but a lot of people don't want their signatures out there. So you don't have to sign a money order or a cashier's check.
The bank signs it.
The bank signs it.
Okay.
Or the post office.
Or the post office, whatever. It is stamped.
Okay. And what else can they do?
Now, the other thing you need to do is send everything certified mail return receipt requested. And keep the proof of purchase receipt. The post office now gives you receipts for purchasing a money order. Hang on to that. And don't put a lot of other purchases on that receipt. Keep it only for that money order. If you have to buy several different money orders, make them different receipts.
Okay.
And hang on to that. Here's the problem with living in a CID. You can never get rid of these files. You have to keep these files until you move and are able to incinerate them, but you must keep them forever.
So much for carefree living, huh?
You can't. You'll be buying file cabinets until the day you die. In fact, we've got a little section in the book that says we will make you pay from beyond the grave. And boy, that is the truth.
So much for
my paying is sending me to my grave.
So much for carefree living. Yeah, it is
time consuming.
It is hard work. It absolutely is.
And you have to confirm the actual date, your due date, with your CC&Rs, not what the board or the management company tells you. Make sure everybody listening out there, make sure without fail that you place on your check that you write, this payment is to be applied only to the monthly dues assessment for fill in that date and not applied to any outstanding bills, special assessments, or third parties. This is in our article as well. If you missed that, you can get it from the article. She might even have it on her website.
Or a link to the electronic.
I can do that.
You must write that on there. What we are finding, we're getting loads of mail from people who say, I paid my dues, but what happened was they misapplied it. They applied it to something else. And the board's argument was, hey, you owed money on a past special assessment. That money went there. Guess what? You're in default. You owe us money for your monthly dues. Make sure that money goes where you tell them it goes, not where they decide it goes.
All good advice, and you need to, you know, you guys need to heed it, because this is, after all, carefree living, right? And you got to protect that. The privilege of carefree living.
I don't know if this will segue into your proxies, but I think it's important, because those proxies that go to board members can change the rules on how you pay and when you pay. If the board uses those proxies to vote in different dates or different payments, or different places for payment, those proxies that the board gets their hands on can change your rules and your regulations. So you want to be very careful who you give those proxies to.
Good point. Yeah, we're not going to have time to get into everything. As much as I tried to pick out some of the tastiest morsels in this book, and even though I kept it to four, we're not going to have time to get to everything.
We can sneak in one more thing if we've got a minute.
Oh, you've got a minute. What I was going to say is you're just going to have to come back.
That's fine. Listen, all right, listen, all you listeners out there, make sure, before this program is over, that you get something in writing from your board that gives you a physical address to deliver your payments to, not a post office box. Because if you are at the 11th hour and you must make a payment, you have to have that delivered through a carrier like FedEx or UPS or Messenger. You want to make sure you have a physical address, not a post office box.
That's right. Yep.
That's a good point. I usually tell everyone to make a copy of their checks, hand deliver it, and have them sign it, because quite often boards will sit on them, managers will sit on them, the checks will just get lost, they don't get deposited till after the due date, and then, you're stuck in this runaround here.
There's only one caveat to that, Shu, and you have to make sure that when you do hand deliver it,
mm-hmm.
and they sign for it,
mm-hmm.
that the signature's legible.
That's
and that they
true.
Put their name next to it. It's in That's the true. Article, but please make sure you've got that address where to hand deliver your payments.
Yes.
It's imperative that you get
yes.
that.
Yes. Yes.
And the last thing, and I'm going to say this before you go off the air.
We got time.
The most important document you can ask your board for that you probably won't get, but you've got to keep on them, is your insurance policies. You can't ask for this once. You're going to have to pay to get these, and you need to do it every 6 months because you don't know what has changed in the interim, and you'll never know, and you'll have nothing to compare it to unless you do this every 6 months religiously.
Carefree living, folks.
welcome to your new amenities. You get a pool and you get a headache.
Quickly, page 496 of Villa Pauling, you've got your first step in solving this problem.
496.
Yes.
Right in the book.
Yes. I love what you say because you refer to England and you refer to every, you know, this communal living working very well in the Mews without.
I never had a problem. I used to live in Knightsbridge. I never had a problem there. My neighbors were wonderful people. Even if they ran over my garbage can, they came and replaced it the next day. They did it on their own. Nobody cared what color the house was, the front door, the roof. Nobody cared.
That's
the only thing they cared about was the crazy American who was barbecuing on her patio in the rain. And they never even complained. They wanted to come over and wanted to know what time dinner was.
Oh, there you go.
But, yes, this is a problem here. It is not what it was intended to be. It has taken on a life of its own and is a horrible existence.
You're absolutely right. It has taken on a life of its own.
It needs to be abandoned, frankly. It needs to have a stay on all legislation, and it needs to be relooked at.
I agree. I've been preaching that. I absolutely couldn't agree with you.
Deed restrictions on homes, in my opinion, are now have become deed restrictions on personal lives,
uh-huh.
on families. You are restricted in what you can and you cannot do.
Okay. Thank you so much, Steve and Donnie. I really enjoyed having you guys here on the Commons with me, and I really do hope you will come back because, as I said, we've only scratched the surface. There's plenty more Villa Pauling to talk about. And I want to thank you all for joining us. We're on the Commons, and we will be back here next Saturday from 2 to 3. Don't forget, we've also got It's Your Turn from 1 to 2. That's when you get to call in and you get to tell us what's on your mind, and we want to hear from you. And we'll get the phone number out there, and we'll do everything you need to know. If you're interested in getting in touch with Steve and Donnie, their email address is villaappalling@earthlink.net. And if you want to go to my website and get more information about Villa Pauling, you can do so by going to onthecommons.com. Stay tuned, because coming up at 4 is Squire with Night Train. And we'll be back next week. Have a great week. Keep warm. On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. I'm Shu, and see you all next week.
Bye.